Okay, good morning everyone, and welcome to part two of our series entitled Jesus Dangerous Revolutionary. We had a bit of a chat amongst the preachers, and it falls to me to raise the question, did Jesus have a sense of humour? And so I'll be looking at that. But by way of introduction, I thought we'd have a bit of fun. And so I'm going to start by asking the question, what was your favourite funniest ad of all time? Being of a certain age, my memory actually goes back quite a way. Rather sadly, actually, I remember many of the funniest ads in the 70s and 80s and 90s being all about smoking and tobacco. I remember Happiness being a cigar called Hamlet, which involved various tragic moments for people, including the lighting of matches on bald heads and the Carlos Fandango super tyres that wouldn't fit out of the stable door. But actually, my favourite tobacco ad was for pipe tobacco, and it was the Condor ad, and it was a very favourite ad, funny ad, because there's this guy enjoying his Condor moment by the side of a quiet pool. Across the other side of the pool, a dad appears with his little boy, and they get this little speedboat, which makes a horrible noise, and it goes, and it races around the pool, and it's making a load of noise, which obviously spoils the Condor moment. So the guy just gently reaches for his little own remote control, out of the depth of the pond comes a U-boat that torpedoes the speedboat, and it sinks, and the poor boy and dad go away dejected. And for me, I thought that was a hilarious ad. But actually, none of these compare to the famous Carling squirrel ad, which hopefully some of you will remember. A team of ingenious engineers set up a complicated route by which a squirrel can get through to a load of nuts, and so he manages to get through all of these obstacles in order to finally get to the end. And of course, the classic line, "I bet you he drinks Carling Black Label," is I think the conclusion to that ad. So lots of funny ads, it may be an idea actually. Our challenge for this week is for you to post your favourite funny ad on the church Facebook site. But there are many more that you will remember. Of course, there was for Smash Get Mash, or Mash Get Smash, wasn't there? Those funny alien creatures commenting on why it was so stupid to mash potatoes when you could have it in an instant form. What else? Oh, yeah, there's another classic John West salmon ad, which was absolutely bizarre. They had a whole load of boring ads about John West salmon. And then suddenly they had an ad in which a John West fisherman goes and punches a grizzly bear and steals his salmon off him and runs off with it. And then they went back to having a load of boring ads again. So right in the middle of this John West ad sort of season, there was this ad. So anyway, like I said, post your favourite ad and we can have a bit of fun there. But my question for this morning is, Jesus Dangerous Revolutionary, was Jesus funny? And you probably think that's a slightly odd thing to ask, because if Jesus is a dangerous revolutionary, then surely he can't be funny, because he's being dangerous and revolutionary, and therefore, do you mean he's not going to be funny? He's going to be doing revolutionary stuff. I've come to the conclusion that Jesus' sense of humour was actually a key part of him being a dangerous revolutionary. And we're going to look at that this morning, and we're going to look at it in three ways. We're going to look at some of the things that he said, his one-liners, his phrases. We're going to look at it in terms of some of the nicknames he gave to some of his crew, his disciples. And we're going to look at a few scenarios or scenes or instances where Jesus displayed a sense of humour. So if we start with the first of these, we're going to look at his sayings. I've put down here, I've got sayings, nicknames and situations are going to be my three things that we're going to be looking at. And let's start with a few sayings. Now, first of all, just to say that on the face of it, these sayings aren't particularly funny. We are really familiar with them, and we've heard them again and again and again. And also, I think they are slightly lost in translation as well, because apparently they're a lot funnier in the original Aramaic than they are in modern-day English. And so we're going to look at them together, and we're going to work out in what way are they funny and sharp both at the same time. So I've got three of these to look at, and they'll come up on your screen, so there's no need to sort of turn to Bibles. You can look at them just on the screens. They'll be on there for you to look at. So the first saying that we're going to look at is this: it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. I'll say that again. It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Now, that relies on the humour of exaggeration. Clearly, a camel is not going to go through a needle. You've got a whacking great camel, and then you've got a very small needle, and obviously the eye of the needle is not going to fit the camel. And I think a lot of Jewish humour seem to rely on that sort of level of exaggeration. The other two ones are equally exaggerated. So clearly that was a key part of Jewish humour. And Jesus is sort of making the point that a camel, which is both large and looks a bit foolish and ugly and is a beast of burden, is just not going to get through eye of a needle and into the other side, I guess. And the interesting point that Jesus is making about the camel is that, first of all, that, as I said, he's large. I think it's true to say that often people who are wealthy are a bit large, in a sense of they're a bit sort of full of themselves, and they're a bit sort of big-headed, and they're a bit more important than perhaps they should be. And so already he's making that point. They are large. He's saying they're foolish because they made a wrong choice in terms of what to chase after all their lives. And they are burdened by their love of wealth. And so Jesus is already making a number of sort of pointed remarks linked to this silly picture of this camel. And then he goes on to say, obviously, that they can't go through the eye of a needle. Now, some people have suggested, of course, that the eye of the needle was a particular gate that was situated in either Damascus or Jerusalem that was called the eye of the needle. It was the size of a human being. And that actually, if a camel was to get through that gate, they had to go onto their knees and literally crawl through on not hands and knees, but knees and knees in order to get through to the other side. So there was this suggestion that, again, a silly picture of a camel trying to get through a human-sized door. And so you can see that there is humour combined with sharpness. And again, we have another statement, which again will come up on your screens, which again relies on exaggeration, which is this: take the plank out of your own eye before you can see clearly to remove the speck in your brother's eye. Again, the humour of exaggeration is used. There have been many times when I've had to take specks out of both my wife's eye and my children's eyes. They've often said, oh, there's something in my eye, there's something in my eye, can you have a look? And then you sort of have a look, and then you look in the corner and you see this tiny speck, and then you have to work out, how am I going to get this out without damaging the cornea? You see that white thing, you're just trying to sort of flick it out, and you think, oh no, that's going to make it even more painful. And so it's quite a delicate and painful exercise. And what Jesus is saying, you know, you would not be trying to perform that exercise if you had a thumping great splinter in your own eye. Because you'd be in a lot of pain and you'd be in a lot of agony yourself, and you wouldn't even be able to see. And so again, he's relying on that humour of exaggeration to suggest that if your own life isn't sorted, if your own life is in a mess, if you've got all sorts of issues for yourself, then, you know, by what rights are you offering opinions and guidance in terms of how other people should be living their lives? And that is a great lesson for us today as we live our lives with members of our family or with close ones who we love to offer opinions on. Do ask yourself that question in lockdown. Is your life as sorted as you think, and should you be sorting out other people's lives quite so much as you might be at the moment? But anyway, that's a little aside. You can see Jesus' humour at work again. And finally, another one-liner that Jesus used was this thing about, he said, oh, what was it? I need to just read it. He said, you blind guides, he's speaking to the Pharisees, you strain out a gnat but swallow a camel. So again, we have the camel making another reappearance. Why swallowing a camel? Well, I guess a camel is, again, big and hairy and difficult to swallow. What he's saying to the Pharisees is, why do you spend all your time focusing on minutiae and stupid issues how you do certain religious ceremonies or which days you observe or what you do and don't do to keep the Sabbath and all these sorts of things. But he says, but actually regarding the really important issues, you just take a moment on sort of hook, line and sinker and you couldn't care less. You know, issues of really bad social justice or issues of, poverty or issues of injustice. You're just happy to accept those whilst being concerned about sort of religious niceties. And again, that's an important lesson for leaders today, especially during this corona crisis. Are we looking out for the interests of the disadvantaged? Are we trying to help out those who are poor and needy? Are we trying to, you know, work hard in our local community, which is why it's great that Matt promoted bags of food again this morning before I was speaking, because actually it's just a really important part of us as a church that we are not just focusing on nice videos, I guess, or good presentations or doing things right or in the right order, but actually we're also loving mercy and doing justice and caring for the needs of the poor and making sure that that is a big part of who we are. And I am absolutely delighted by the way that that has snowballed and also by the way that various members of the general public have piled in terms of buying stuff and doing stuff. And it's part of almost a swirl of social justice. And it's lovely to see Jubilee at the centre of that. So again, I have strayed from my subject matter. But do see how Jesus had a number of one-liners that relied on exaggeration in order to make really important points. Absolutely crucial points, yeah. That it's quite difficult for people who are obsessed with wealth to be like little children and enter the kingdom. That you shouldn't judge people if your own life isn't sorted. And let's face it, most of our own lives aren't sorted. And finally, that we need to focus on the big issues as Christians and not just be obsessed with the little things. And so those are the three sayings. We're going to move on to nicknames now. And again, Jesus did use humour in terms of what he called some of his disciples. If you remember, James and John had a little incident at a Samaritan village where the people of the Samaritan village, I think, rejected Christ. They got severely hacked off. And they said, right, we're going to call down lightning. In fact, do you give us permission to call down lightning? Or I don't know whether Jesus was going to call down the lightning or whether they were going to call down the lightning. It's not made altogether clear. I think they were asking him whether they could call down lightning. Jesus, of course, declines their request and then refers to them, gives them the nickname Sons of Thunder from then on. And from then on, that's what they're called. They're called Sons of Thunder within the discipleship group. Which is a sort of humorous name, but it's also a little dig at them and their willingness to lose their temper. And of course, the other one who got a nickname was Peter. Jesus called him Cephas, as you remember, which means rock. And that was a really clever wordplay because Cephas also is Petros in the Greek, which links into Peter's name. Petros and Peter are very similar in terms of names, clearly. So you've got Cephas becomes Petros, which is Peter, which is the rock. And then, of course, the rock on which I will build my church, which was also slightly ironical, I think you'll find, because right up until Jesus' death, Peter was probably the most unreliable member of that group and did the most flaky things, chopping off ears and denying Christ and generally being very impulsive and thoroughly unreliable. And so I think Jesus and his father must have shared a bit of a sense of humour in terms of saying, actually, upon this guy, the whole of the church is going to be built, which, of course, is what happened in Acts when Peter preached his first message at Pentecost and 3,000 were saved and the early church was started on Peter's preach. And so that is just marvellous comic timing by Jesus and his father. And so if we move on, we can also look at some scenarios in which, again, there is very gentle humour that emerges. And I think it actually takes a little while to sort of... You have to look quite carefully at the stories in order to unravel the humour, if you like, and work out what's funny. But I think the wedding of Cana is a classic example of gentle humour. Jesus attends a wedding with his mum. You will know the story well. The wine runs out. Mum goes to Jesus, knows his miraculous powers, and says to Jesus, please, can you produce more wine or this place is going to be a social bust, basically, and it's all going to fall apart. And Jesus just looks at her and says, why do you bother me, woman? My time has not yet come. He's anticipating that the beginning of his ministry that's going to save the world is going to happen in 2 or 3 weeks' time. And yet his mum has come to him and completely thrown his timetable, and also has managed to engineer it so that his very first miracle is going to be the production of large quantities of alcohol. Now, if you were God on earth and you were about to launch into ministry, I think you'd be wanting to resurrect the dead or heal someone significant or do something that's really caring or really loving as your first miracle. I don't think the production of a huge amount of booze is going to be your very first miracle. And so Jesus is left with this quandary. You know, what do I do? Do I say, Mum, I'm not going to do it? Or do I say, I am going to do it? Now, he did it, presumably, because he saw the embarrassment of the social situation, and probably more importantly, because he loved his mum. I have to say that my theory on this one, and this is entirely conjecture, but I think God deliberately set his son up on this scenario. So I think God thought, this is going to be funny. I'm going to place Jesus in a dilemma about whether he launches his ministry early, and I'm going to almost see what he does with this one. Yeah, is he going to go with plan A and launch ministry in 2-3 weeks' time or months' time or whenever he originally planned to, or is he going to be flexible and launch early? It's interesting, and I think this is a lesson for us all, it is interesting that love and flexibility triumphed over pre-planning and control. Yeah, and I'll say that again, love and flexibility triumphed over pre-planning and control, because Jesus did change his entire plans because he loved his mum. And I think that's both funny and ingenious and something to think about. So that's the wedding at Cana. You've also got the road to Emmaus. I won't say a huge amount about that, but Jesus, I think, sails extremely close to the wind on this one as the really depressed disciples are trudging back from Jerusalem. It's been a disastrous weekend. Jesus has died. He's been crucified, obviously. He's been buried. They've given up. They've called it a day. They've decided this is a complete washout. We're going back home to Emmaus. We're going to resume our lives back there. They are miserable. And, of course, a stranger joins them on the road. And they relate to him and say, have you not heard the appalling things that have happened in Jerusalem? And Jesus' response is classic. His response is, what things? Yeah, now, obviously Jesus knew what things, okay, but he asked them what things because he's trying to draw them out. I think he's a bit frivolous as well. I think because obviously he's done the big work. He's actually saved the world. He's resurrected. I think he's entitled to be a little bit carefree. And so he asks them what things, which I think is hilarious. And so they then unburden themselves. And he has a long discussion with them. Also, at the end of that story, there's a wonderful instance where Jesus pretends like he's going to carry on and waits for them to invite him in to have a meal with them, which, again, is great. But I'll leave you with a final scenario, and this is the one on the beach. Again, I think there's nice comic timing in this. I'm just going to read it out. It's always good to have a passage that we read out together. And we're just going to read out a few verses from John chapter 21. Beginning at verse 1, and we're just going to talk those through together. 21, John 21 says this: afterwards, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee, back in their old stomping ground where, in a sense, they were called in the first place. It happened this way: Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, another nickname, which means twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, the sons of thunder, already referenced, and two other disciples were together. I'm going out to fish, Simon Peter told them. Yeah, and they said, okay, we'll go with you. See how Simon Peter's always the leader, and they're always following, and he's the impulsive one. So you think, come on, boys, let's go fishing. So they went out, and they got into the boat, and that night caught nothing. Okay, we've sort of heard this story before, haven't we? We've sort of heard of a time right at the beginning of their ministry where they went fishing and caught nothing. So no one is detecting anything in the moment, but we carry on. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus because it would have spoiled the joke, basically. So Jesus remains mysterious. He calls out to them, friends, Actually, if you read the Aramaic, the word for friend is not friend, it's boys or lads. Okay, so Jesus says, boys or lads, haven't you caught any fish? Okay, he is being deliberately patronizing here, and he obviously knows that they haven't caught any fish. So he's asking them a question that he already fully knows the answer to. Yeah, and he basically says, haven't you caught any fish? This is a humorous moment, okay? No, they answered. Okay, this is a one-word answer. They've had a really tiring night. They've been right through the night. They have caught no fish. It's been a tiring, exhausting, and rather depressing night. And so their answer to Jesus is succinct, to say the least. Okay, they don't give an explanation this time. They just say no. And so Jesus replies, throw your net onto the right side of the boat and you will find some. Yeah, I love it. And you will find some. Understatement of the year, of course. You might find a few if you throw your net over the other side. And when they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the huge number of fish that had been caught. And so the divine gag that is orchestrated by Father and Son is played on the disciples again in exactly the same form. So you've got the Father who would have orchestrated no fish in the net throughout the night. And then, of course, you have the miracle of the fish in the net in the morning. And Jesus arranges it all. It's funny, basically. I think it's funny. I think it's a great scenario. Yeah, and so it goes on and it says, then the disciple whom Jesus loved, that's John, who obviously wrote the book, also one of the sons of thunder, said to Peter, it is the Lord. Yeah, I wonder how he said it, actually. He might have said it, oh, it's the Lord. Or he might have said, it's the Lord. Or he might have said, it's the Lord. Yeah, do you mean, how did he say it? I'm intrigued by that. I wonder how he would have said it. Yeah, and we don't know how he said it, but of course, as soon as Simon Peter heard him say this, it is the Lord. He wrapped his outer garment around him. We don't know why he wrapped his outer garment around him. That's a mystery. And he jumped into the water and didn't walk on water, I presume. I presume he sort of swam through the water, or just sort of perhaps it was shallow enough for him to go through the water to find Jesus on the shoreline. And the other disciples followed in the boat, towing a net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. Yeah, so he probably walked through the water. When they landed, of course, the whole joke is set up by Jesus well in advance. There is a fire of burning coals with a few fish ready to receive more fish that the disciples have caught. Now, if that isn't funny, okay, I don't know what is. And of course, Jesus does go on later and have a bit of a serious discussion with Peter in terms of restoring him, in terms of drawing him back into mission, in terms of telling him the plan of action for the church. But Jesus' first priority is to be with his boys and have breakfast with them, and have a bit of a fun and joke with them, and actually be friends together. Yeah, and I think that's really important to remember that Jesus' absolute first priority was friendship. And I think I just want to say this, and some of us come from quite a serious tradition of evangelical Christianity. I know I do. I had grandparents who were very serious about their Christian faith. They were talking about cost a lot. They were talking about sacrifice a lot. They did indeed make big sacrifices, went to India. And so there was this quite a sort of stern view of Christianity, that it did involve lots of personal devotion, lots of self-sacrifice, lots of commitment, yeah. And there was almost a sense in which sort of humour and friendship and whatever were a bit downplayed. They were a bit sort of second fiddle to the important disciplines. But I want to suggest to you that that's not actually in the Bible. I want to suggest to you that actually being friends together, having fun together, having humorous conversations together, and fellowship are really important parts of being a Christian. I just want to encourage us to reflect on that. I think it's almost dualistic to suggest that, you know, the spiritual things, the spiritual activities are the important things, but the sort of earthly things like having fun or doing stuff together, even the physical stuff is unimportant. The Bible never teaches that. The Bible says that both are important, that actually it's important to do the spiritual disciplines, but it's also important to do the physical things. Yeah, have the friendships, have the fun together, have the fellowship, build up the friendships, all those sorts of things. And so I'm just going to finish off by a few practical applications. Why is humour important to the Christian? And I'll just put a few things down, and I just want us to think about these briefly. Firstly, in facing adversity, I think humour is really important. I think Jesus says, be of good cheer because I've overcome the world. Yeah, and being of good cheer involves having a sense of humour. It involves having an ability to be of good cheer. Secondly, I think having a sense of humour is really important in lockdown when you're living with close relatives. Yeah, you need the ability to have a laugh and a joke with them and find the funny side of different things is really important. And so I'd encourage families out there to have fun as you do stuff together. Thirdly, and this is a really important point, I want to say this and really emphasise this, is as Christians, we should not take ourselves too seriously. Yeah, I think, and I'll try and say this delicately, I think I come across a lot of Christians who really take themselves very seriously, especially leaders. And they're very serious about their faith. They're very serious about what they say. They're very serious about the importance of being sort of right and godly and all the rest of it. But actually, I think we shouldn't take ourselves quite so seriously. I think we should have a sense of humour. It should be possible for people to poke fun at us and for us to take it well. Okay, I'll give you an example. We love to get feedback in terms of our preachers. We love to get sort of emails coming in. And so I received an email the other week from, I'll call him Mr. X from Spelthorn. He writes this, and I'll just share it with you. Hi, Dave. I just thought I'd like to tell you that there is a 50% off all clothes sale at Tesco's. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? You think, that's interesting. What's he going to say next? This might help now that you are doing YouTube videos for new visitors checking in so you look respectable as our pastor. Okay, and finally, not like some homeless man. Now, I have shared with Mr. X, and he is happy for this to be, this is genuine, I haven't made this up. And so you'll have noticed that because of Mr. X's remarks, I have actually changed my jumper. I was going to stay with the original jumper, and I was hoping that I could wear the original jumper throughout the whole of the video presentations. I thought it would be a bit of a sort of John the Baptist experience, where I could be in lockdown and wear the same clothes throughout the whole coronavirus thing, almost as a statement of asceticism and whatever. But I clearly can't do that. I've already been rumbled. I know a number of others have actually rumbled me on that front as well. And so I have, for you, changed my jumper. But actually, do you know how I could have taken it badly and I could have looked all serious and I could have thought, how dare someone speak to me like that? I'm the leader of the church. Do you mean I'm in charge? I'm the important one. No one gets to speak to me in such a way. Do you know what I mean? I could have looked sort of all serious and looked like I had sort of poker inserted in a bad place. Yeah, sometimes people look like this. Yeah, and that's how I could have reacted. But actually, it's important that we don't take ourselves too seriously. And I'm just going to say that to all of you, especially leaders, that have a lightness in the way that you interact with people. Have an ability to both gently poke fun at others, but also, more importantly, allow them to poke fun at you and identify your weaknesses and not be over defensive. And not think, how dare they, and not think, how am I going to get my own back, or how am I going to freeze them out, or how am I going to ignore, do you know what I mean? I think it's really important to think about these things. Okay, and my third point in terms of why humour is important is this, that actually we can get a message through better if we use humour to accompany it. If you just say something really bald, the bald truth, and if you just tell them something without covering it with a joke or without just including a bit of humour, it won't get through. It'll just bounce straight off as the person takes offence and pushes it away. And finally, we can use humour in our witness. People look at us more for who we are than what we do or say sometimes. And if people see us as being dull, boring and humourless, they're not going to be attracted to us. I have to say that. As Christians, we need to be whole people, which includes our sense of humour. And so we are there. We are at the 30-minute mark. In fact, I think I had just strayed over it. I may be the very first preacher to stray over the 30-minute mark, so apologies for that. But there are some important points there, and I'd love us to think about those. I'm going to pray now, and I'm going to pray that God gives us a sense of humour to get through these various challenges that we are facing at the moment. Lord Jesus, I thank you for our time together with you. This morning, I thank you for the way that we've looked at your word. We've looked at the way in which you've said funny but sharp things, the way that you've had mates and you've called them different names, and also these different scenarios that you were involved with. Lord, wedding at Cana, road to Emmaus, Lord, fishing with your mates, and just the humour that is contained within these different scenarios. And so, Lord, I pray that you'd help us to see that humour is an important part of the Christian makeup. Lord, as we think about the application points, help us to be able to have a sense of humour, Lord, when we face adversity, to have a sense of humour in our homes with our families, to have a sense of humour that allows people to take the mickey out of us and not be offended and not take it personally, a sense of humour that means that we don't take ourselves too seriously. Lord, allow us to have a sense of humour that means that we can relate to people out in the world, that we can form a relationship with them. And then through the natural, how shall I put it, medium of our personalities, we can then introduce the gospel again in a natural way. Lord, I pray for Jubilee Church, and I pray that you will bless us as we move forward together. And Lord, also I pray for everyone who's listening in, who wants to learn more about Jesus. I pray that they would stay with it. And continue to listen to this series week by week in order to get a really good picture of the real Jesus and why he is so important and why he is so significant. Lord, I ask in his precious name. Amen.